trends for your home and garden combined with a twist of the past. Hi, and welcome to our very first Nest in Style podcast. I'm Jamie Jenkins, owner of ahamodernliving.com.
And I'm Teresa O'Connor of seasonalwisdom.com. So, Jamie, why don't you tell people how the Nest in Style podcast got started?
It all started at the Garden Writers Association meeting when Jean Ann Van Crevelin, also known as at Jean Ann BK on Twitter, invited us to participate in a podcast about social media along with Susan L. Morrison on Twitter. And if you guys haven't had a chance to check out Good Enough Gardening podcast, you should, because Amanda and Jean Ann are hilarious. After podcasting with Teresa, I spent some time trying to figure out how Teresa and I could work together again in the future. Because not only does Teresa have an extensive garden background with her training as a master gardener in Idaho and California, but her passion for history and for the ways of the past, I thought would combine really well with my love of modern design. Then one thing led to another, and before you know it, we are featuring our first Nest in Style podcast together. As you all know, when doing anything for the first time, there can be a number of hurdles to overcome. So when you guys listen to Teresa, she's going to sound like she is podcasting from the bottom of a tin can.
Yes, Jamie. And as you know, I'm not in a tin can. So we thank you, listeners, for bearing with us as we work out these details.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, let's get back to the show. So to catch everybody up where we are now with this podcast, some of you may have read my blog or followed me on Twitter at Nest in Style. You're obviously going to see a transformation with the show. We are going to be morphing the blog more into a podcast series. So, Teresa, tell our listeners what they can expect from future podcasts.
Sure, Jamie. What we hope to bring you with the Nest in Style podcast is the latest news on everything from gardening to local foods to healthy lifestyle and to home decor. And we're going to mix all that trend information with seasonal wisdom of the past. We're bringing in some very cool guests on a whole range of topics, many of whom you already know already. And you can always find these resources as well as links to these people on our podcast page. So we hope to really give you a lot of news you can use. Today we're going to focus on the holidays, not surprisingly. And we just finished up Hanukkah, didn't we, Jamie?
Yes, we did, Teresa. And did you know Hanukkah actually means dedication in Hebrew? After a long, bitter war with the Greeks back in 165 BC, the Jewish people reclaimed their temple that was previously converted to worship Zeus by the Greeks. A celebration was obviously in order, and they wanted to light the menorah during the celebration, but they only had enough oil to last one day. But miraculously, the oil lasted for 8 days. And this is the reason why we celebrate Hanukkah today. And this is what I thought was really interesting, Teresa. Menorahs can come in all shapes and sizes, but the only requirement is that the flame be separated enough so it doesn't look too big and resemble a pagan fire.
That's really interesting, Jamie. And I bet you many of those pagan fires were burning in past centuries on today, December 21st, because today is the winter solstice. Now, the winter solstice is the year's longest night in the Northern Hemisphere. And this year it occurred at 12:47 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which means that from this point forward in the Northern Hemisphere, the days are going to grow longer until June, which if you live in the northern climates, this is really good news, isn't it, Jamie?
Hallelujah.
And, incidentally, Jamie, the winter solstice was considered midwinter, not the start of winter as we know it today. And I don't know about you, but that makes a lot more sense to me. Now, you know, since the dawn of time, the winter solstice has been a very important time to celebrate throughout the Northern Hemisphere. And that's because these people, you know, they were living close to nature. They had to survive the elements and live on whatever food they could store away or hunt. They didn't have the creature comforts we have today, like central heating and warm fleece clothing and down comforters. So it's little wonder that they rejoiced that this darkest period of the year was about to end and that they could start planting again in a few months. It was a very happy time.
Well, that's really interesting and all, Teresa, but what does winter solstice have to do with Christmas?
That is a really good question, Jamie. And to find the answer to that, you have to flash forward to the 4th century AD, ancient Rome. You know, for 400 years, the first 400 years of Christianity, nobody really knew when to celebrate the birth of Christ because nobody really knew when Jesus was born. So it wasn't until the Roman Emperor Constantine appointed Christmas on December 25th that this holiday began to be celebrated on the day that we celebrate it. And by the way, in the early calendar that had been established by Julius Caesar, December 25th was considered the winter solstice. So there were all these pagans already celebrating the return of the sun, the birthday of the sun. I mean, it seemed like the perfect time to put Christmas as well.
That's really interesting, Teresa. So when did Christmas really start to take off as a holiday?
It took a while for Christmas to get going as a holiday, and it didn't rank high for centuries. And there's a couple reasons, Jamie. Many of the traditions had pre-Christian roots, dating back to Saturnalia, an important festival around that time, and other festivals that were going on. And the church wasn't eager to connect to these ancient pagan rituals because they tended to be rather boisterous and rowdy with lots of drinking and carrying on going on. We do know, however, that by the Middle Ages, Christmas had become a popular celebration in Europe. You know, they had the Advent season, which would be the weeks leading up to Christmas, and everybody would go on a reduced diet to hold on to their supplies. So by the time Christmas came, there was a huge feast that would usher in 12 days of fun. And we know from the records that there was one feast in England in 1594 that had 8 hogsheads of beer, beef, mutton, pork, blackbirds, larks, rabbits, hens, and wild game. Quite a feast. And there were lots of card playing, carol singing, storytelling, party tales, etc. It was definitely a festive time.
Okay, so you mentioned about fires playing a big role in the winter solstice, but what about Christmas? Did it play a big role in that holiday?
Absolutely. Most families got their light from the hearth. And this fire not only was important for heat, but also for the light and comfort it brought at a dark time of year for these people. So there were Yule fires and Christmas logs and Christmas candles, and they all had different names and different traditions. And some of these logs were just huge, and they'd be brought into the home with lots of hoopla, you know, because they thought that these logs, Jamie, actually had magical protection over the home. So, for example, some of the superstitions were that you shouldn't buy your Christmas log. You should be given it as a gift, or you should find it or take it from somewhere on your property, which is a little hard to do these days. Some people only burn these logs leading up to the holiday, others on Christmas Eve at dusk. Some people burn the logs all night long or through the 12 days of Christmas. But the one thing that stayed constant, dating back for centuries, is that portions of these logs would be scattered around secure places in the home, maybe under the bed or around the house to protect the house from thunder or fire for the year. And they'd also scatter the ashes out into the garden to fertilize their crops. So whatever log or fire traditions you implement into your household this Christmas season, one particularly nice one is to save a piece from this year's log to light next year's log. That's something that people have been doing for centuries, and I hope it brings you lots of luck.
There's nothing like a roaring fire during the wintertime. What were some of the traditions?
You know, Jamie, one of my favorite traditions from these earlier centuries is a character called the Lord of Misrule. And this Lord of Misrule would be appointed by towns and cities and manor houses, and they would preside over all the Christmas festivities. I mean, from everything from elaborate processions, plays, and celebrations of all types with music and dancing. And these little Lord of Misrules would have a complete court, and they would be dressed in all this colorful, bejeweled clothing and given special powers as though they were a very important nobleman. They say that during the time of King Henry VIII, that the Lord of Misrule was found in, quote, the house of every nobleman of honor and good worship.
Well, now that sounds like a wild party.
It sure does, Jamie. And by the 17th century in England, a lot of folks agreed with you that the partying was getting out of hand. During the English Reformation period, which, by the way, took place between 1640s and 1660s, the Protestant extremists outlawed Christmas. They thought that holiday was too wild and that there were too many Catholic traditions by this point. That meant you couldn't decorate your house, you couldn't sing Christmas carols, or even serve the traditional roast goose.
That's just wild. Talk about a bunch of Scrooges.
I know. And it wasn't just England, it was the New England colonies in America, too. Christmas wasn't celebrated from 1659 until the 19th century, and it was only after the German and Irish immigrants moved more into the colonies and the nation that this holiday began to become more popular here. In Scotland, Christmas wasn't celebrated for nearly 400 years until the 1950s. It wasn't until 1958 that Christmas became an official public holiday in Scotland. Who knew?
Well, geez, I'm glad Christmas isn't against the law anymore. You know, one of my favorite traditions is finding the perfect Christmas tree. Teresa, what can you tell us about the role of evergreens in earlier cultures?
Well, Jamie, since the earliest times, people have brought evergreens into their home around midwinter. And this wasn't only in pagan times. This continued on into Christian times, and evergreens were even displayed prominently in Catholic churches as early as the Middle Ages. It's because when everything's looking all dead and dormant, it's the evergreens like the pine and the fir and the cedar that add that wonderful aroma and color and sense of light to the indoors. And in the Middle Ages particularly, holly and ivy were especially popular. And you know that song, Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Well, that's a perfect example. Now, incidentally, holly was usually considered the male, and ivy was considered the female in a lot of these earlier poems and songs. But they also decorated with rosemary and bay and mistletoe. So these evergreens were always a very important part. But it took a while before Christmas trees really got off to a good start in the United States. They've been popular in Germany for centuries before they got popular in mainstream United States. And many mainstream Americans considered Christmas trees to be rather dangerous pagan symbols, although they could be found in Pennsylvania settlements as early as 1747. They still weren't really accepted by mainstream society for quite a while.
Huh, so when did all that change?
Well, in 1846, the popular Queen Victoria of England and her German husband, Prince Albert, they were shown it with a Christmas tree in the Illustrated London News. I mean, Christmas trees started to spread quickly throughout Europe, Russia, and the United States. And by the 20th century, the Christmas tree was firmly established in this country. And all I have to say is thank goodness, because that's one of my favorite holiday traditions, is pulling out those old ornaments and remembering all the memories that are attached with them.
You know, Teresa, I completely agree. It's one of my favorite holiday traditions as well. But you know, unfortunately, a lot of those trees end up in the landfill. And one of the ways... Actually, you wrote a really nice blogcast for me on ahamodernliving.com on the 8 eco-friendly ways to recycle your Christmas tree this year. So we can tell you ideas from how to create your own pine needle bath oil to using your Christmas tree as an actual bird feeder out in the yard. You can find a link to Teresa O'Connor's guest blog post either on our blogcast page or go directly to ahamodernliving.com and visit our blog link. Now, Teresa, we normally find gifts under those Christmas trees. Can you tell us any strange or interesting facts about gifts in the olden days?
Well, you know, Jamie, in ancient Rome, gifts were often given on a holiday called Calends, which fell on January the 1st. So the early church kind of frowned on this idea of giving gift-giving connected with Christmas because it seemed a little bit too much like a pagan holdover. So for centuries, gifts were not given, or they were given on Twelfth Night instead.
Well, times have changed, I tell you. So to get more of a modern twist on some gift ideas for this holiday season, I polled some of our garden friends on Twitter. But before we get started, I thought we could talk about your new book that you have coming out, that you have co-authored with Jean-Anne Van Crevelin. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, thanks for asking, Jamie. It's true. I was invited to co-author a book with Jean-Anne VK on Twitter, Jean-Anne Van Crevelin. And there's also the other co-authors are Robin Ripley and Amanda Thompson, Kiss My Aster on Twitter. So the four of us have co-authored this book called Grocery Gardening, Planting, Preparing, and Preserving Fresh Foods, which is being published by Cool Springs Press and will be coming out on January 15th, although you can pre-order copies on Amazon. And there will be links on the podcast page for you to learn more. So thanks for considering it as a gift.
Well, you're welcome, Teresa. Books make a perfect gift idea for the holiday season, and it sounds like the grocery gardening book is going to be perfect for gardeners at all levels. I know I'm speaking to the choir here when I say gardeners are practical people, but it is very apparent with the feedback I got from our Twitter friends. A lot of the gift ideas that they'd like to see on their holiday list have to do with tools for the garden. So check it out. Here's an interesting idea from Mike, who is at CanarCBK on Twitter. He'd like some heirloom seeds of local vegetables. Now, I can bet money that we're probably going to see Mike, with his shirt off, growing those vegetables on his fire escape balcony. That'll be something to look forward to next year. And then our Southern California friend, Fern, who is at Life on the Balcony, would like some good clippers, gloves, and pot feet. And just a side note, pot feet are awesome for container gardeners because it allows much-needed air circulation to get into the roots underneath the container, as well as keep your deck from getting stained from, you know, water damage and whatnot. And then Jody, who is at Western Gardener, would like a small electric chipper to mulch her garden waste. Now, this is fantastic also because I have a compost pile, and this would be the perfect way to speed up that decomposition process. And Shauna Coronado of the Casual Gardener blog has this really cool idea of a recycled teapot that's actually made into a wind chime. Really cool. You guys got to check it out. And then she also features this Combi shovel series, which actually kind of looks like a ninja star, but she just swears that this is like the best tool on earth, as well as the Cobra head tool. If you guys haven't seen it, you got to check it out, because if you're a finger digger like me, you're going to save your fingernails and your gloves from a lot of wear and tear. Who hasn't wanted a weather station at some point in their gardening life? But Kylie, who is at Our Little Acre on Twitter, forwarded me on this really, really cool weather station. It's got a UV monitor, it can attach to your PC, it has a remote, and also has weather alert capabilities. Christina, who's at Arcadia1 on Twitter, and also a fellow Northwest Twitter friend of mine, wants a soil scoop. And if you guys haven't checked out the soil scoop, it is seriously the jack-of-all-trades kind of tool. So, and she also wants a foldable hand truck like the one mentioned in Sweet Rebecca's blog. So check out the podcast page if you're interested in that, and I'll have a link for you. And then Laura at Interleafer on Twitter wants a simple leaf shredder. Now, folks, this is an awesome idea if you have a lot of leaves and, you know, maybe you don't have access to a yard debris bin, but it actually makes great compost filler. And also, it's good as mulch. So just shred that up in the lawn and then just pack it into your garden beds, and it'll keep those roots nice and warm during our winter months. And then Jenny at Mulch Maven, just like me, wants a tool she can't afford, like Felco's, let's say. But then she also wants something decorative, something made of really cool handmade pottery and a better designed watering can. Jenny, I could not agree with you more. I would love to have a better watering can. And then Susan, who is Susan L. Morrison, she would like a living succulent wreath. Absolutely love living wreaths, especially when they're made of my favorite plant, succulents. Miriam, one of our Canadian Twitter friends, is obsessed with terrariums. Any size, any shape, you name it, she wants it. And what gardener doesn't want to apply a soothing hand cream after a hard day's work in the garden? So that's why I liked Alice's idea. She wants a hand cream scented with lavender. That just sounds so delicious. And a natural herbal insect repellent. Now, if there's a product out there that is organic and actually works, I'll add that to my list. Okay, this list really can go on and on, but for more good gardening gift ideas, check out about.com, especially Carrie Michaels of Container Gardening, and Marie Iannotti? Oh, sorry if I did. But anyway, I'm going to have the resources posted for you guys on the podcast page, so no worries there. Last but not least, let's don't forget our dear friend, and a wise one, Billy Goodnick. I should just mention one of the many hats that Billy wears in a day is being a contributing blogger at finegardening.com. So check him out. His blog is called Cool Green Gardens. And again, that's on finegardening.com. I'm sure on many occasions, Billy has talked about people who prune their shrubs into these weird, awful, unnatural shapes like spheres and cubes. And you know what? I happen to agree with Billy. But so this is what he says his ultimate gift would be, is a solar-powered, non-polluting hedge trimmer with a blade that randomly transforms its shape into natural curves, thereby overriding the lack of imagination of the operator. Okay? I swear, Billy, you're the only person I know that can come up with something that imaginative. And that's it, Teresa. That's all I got.
Those are really good gift ideas, Jamie.
Well, thanks, Teresa. And hey, I wanted to mention one thing I think you should add to your gift list this year is a set of headphones so you don't sound like you're talking from the bottom of a tin can.
Although I do have to say, I think it's one of my sexier sounds.
You've talked a lot about the past traditions, Teresa, but what about the current traditions? Do you have any that you like to do every year?
Well, I'm actually having a winter solstice party tonight. I've done this for several years, and it's a low-key event. We have fires outside and inside, and it's a way for people to relax during a really busy time of year. So there's not any rules or regulations in any way, but I do allow people to make intentions or offerings to the fire if they choose. And this might be something that you want to let go of for 2009, and maybe something you want to attract for 2010. But it's strictly private, and you don't need to tell anybody your intentions. It's just an opportunity to for you to have a venue for this sort of good energy. Now, my friend Carol Hackney, a quality life coach in Boise, she says she keeps a journal, and between the time of the solstice and the new year, she really reflects back on the past year and thinks about what she wants to attract for the next one. But when I talked to Hilary Bruffel, who is a social psychologist from London and who happens to be Hilary _B on Twitter, she told me that traditions are paramount during these times of stress, particularly times of recession, and that we all need to really anchor our sense of self in a familiar landscape, and especially those childhood traditions that take us back to a time when we felt safe and secure. Those are particularly valuable right now, she said. Now, I always think about my friend Hannah Kalsina, who lives near Newport, Rhode Island, but she grew up in the Black Forest of Germany and in the 30s and the 40s. So you can imagine how poor they were. And she said that some of her fondest memories were the Christmas tree, which they would decorate with candles. And that reminds me also of what Ellen Souza of THB Farm on Twitter told me. She grew up in, she lives in Massachusetts now, but she grew up in a Dutch family. And they still follow the Netherlands traditions of leaving cookies in a wooden shoe on December 6th for Sinterklaas. Her mom even still sends her a big chocolate letter every year. So when you contrast that between like some of the California tweeters, it was pretty interesting. For example, Rose Hyden Smith, otherwise known as Victory Grower on Twitter, she says her husband Bill always surfs every Christmas morning before they open their gifts. And Poppy Davis said, yeah, I'm from California. The way she spends her time is horseback riding. So how do you like that?
Okay, seriously, that's just not fair. If there was someplace warm I could visit during the holidays, I'd be there.
Absolutely. And one more thing, Helen Yost told me that she actually, one of her traditions was to start a fundraiser to help raise money for the J.C. Rawlson Arboretum, which is at the North Carolina State University, which I thought was a very nice tradition of helping others.
Teresa, I couldn't agree with you more. Spending time to raise money for a cause that you truly believe in is really something special. For me, every year we go down to the mall and we pick an ornament off the Tree of Life and donate a gift for a child in need. Other than that, we like to donate gifts for Toys for Tots. So whether you just finished celebrating Hanukkah or if you're celebrating Christmas, it's really truly about the traditions that make the holiday so special. Believe it or not, this concludes our first Nest in Style podcast. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And Teresa, why don't you tell us what our listeners can look forward to on our next podcast?
Well, the one thing they have to look forward to is that I won't sound like I'm talking from a tin can. And the second thing they have to look forward to is that we've got a really exciting episode planned with experts from publishing, social media, television, and trade shows, all talking about what excites them the most for 2010. But this is not a trend report, because we know many of you are sick of those trend reports. So this is really just a way for you to get some really cool feedback from people in the know.
Well, that sounds great, Teresa, and I'm really looking forward to you not sounding like you're talking out of a tin can. Not that it wasn't sexy, okay? But we just want to take the time to thank everyone again. And you can look for the resources we talked about today on our podcast page, which you can find at www.nestinstyle.wordpress.com.